morning, everyone. We're going to get started. So I'll call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. I want to thank everyone for being here. We have a number of bills here for public hearing and possible work sessions. And what we're going to do, we do have at least one member that will be testifying today. And so I'm going ahead and ask Representative Tomei if she'll come forward. It looks like you also have Harry Gilmore.
Yes.
Chairman of the Committee, House Bill 2920, Kensington Representative Tomei, allows the Department of Human Services to give the required notice to an individual at DHS as requested the individual's criminal records from the state police before or after the information is obtained from the state police.
Okay. Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, House Bill 2920 came out of a conversation with Lois Day, the Child Welfare Director, and other personnel from the Department of Human Services. This bill will permit DHS to remove some inapplicable and potentially confusing language from a written notice the department is required to provide when conducting criminal background checks and investigating child abuse or neglect. When DHS runs a criminal background check, the law requires DHS to provide written notification to the person being checked. This informs the person of their right to challenge the background check and provides information on how to do so. Part of this notification is language relating to the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964 and employment discrimination. House Bill 2920 changes the required language in the notification when DHS runs background checks related to abuse or neglect investigations. DHS would still have to inform individuals of their right to challenge the content of the record. The bill simply removes the statutory requirement to provide extra information that is inapplicable and confusing. Harry Gibbs from the Department of Human Services is here to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you.
My name is Harry Gilmore from the Department of Human Services. I manage the Interstate Compact and Contracts Unit at DHS. Chair Brzezinski, as Representative Tomei mentioned, and I'd like to thank her for her support of this measure and sponsorship, passage of the bill will allow DHS to remove some potentially misleading information from the written notice that we provide to individuals on whom we conduct background checks in the context of a child abuse or neglect report. We conduct criminal background checks as a normal part of our screening of those reports and of our overall assessment of a report of abuse or neglect. And as the representative mentioned, the information that we provide right now includes a notice to the individual that they have a right to challenge the content of their criminal record if there is a record and they don't believe that it's accurate or that they believe that they've been misidentified in connection with the record. And this bill will not change that provision, that we will still provide that notice to anyone who's subject to a background check in this context. What it would do is allow us to remove language that is inapplicable and potentially anxiety-causing for folks in this situation, because it talks about employment rights and their right to not be discriminated against in the context of an employment decision when they have an arrest history without a history of convictions. It's an important right, but it's completely inapplicable to the checks that we run in the context of an abuse assessment. And the thing that it can do on the part of the subject individual is cause them to think that somehow their employment may be impacted or that their employer may be notified of the information that we're obtaining when running the background check. And, of course, we're not doing that, and we don't want people to think that in any way when we run a background check specifically for the purpose of an abuse investigation. The bill would preserve the language when written notice is provided in the context of any other kind of background check. So if we were running a check for another purpose, that language would still be in the notice. And incidentally, typically we're getting written consent anytime we run a background check for any other purpose than the context of a child abuse investigation or assessment. And so folks are being apprised of their rights, making disclosures, and also signing a consent that allows us to run the check. In a CPS context, it's the only time we're running the check with just a written notice and without signed consent ahead of time. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Questions?
Seems pretty straightforward.
All righty. Let me ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2920. Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing. And are we ready for this one?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are ready for this.
We'll open a work session on House Bill 2920.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves House Bill 2920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Dingfelder, if you'll be our carrier on this one.
Certainly. I'm happy to.
Thank you. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2920. And we have a number of bills that we have scheduled. Some have not had anyone signed up for, so we're going to put those to the bottom of the list since I have no one signed up at this point. And we'll figure out where we go with those as we get closer. And we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3363A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3363A comes to you from Representative Olson and Barker, and what the bill does requires the Department of Human Services to provide to all parties in dependency matter the case plan or modification of the case plan for a child before the court on abuse and neglect. Creates a work group in the dependency proceedings to receive. Yesterday, the A6 amendments, which adds another person to the work group that the governor will appoint.
All right, thank you. Let's go ahead, and I've got three people that are scheduled to give testimony. I'm going to ask for all of you to come forward. Michael Livingston, Megan Schultz, and Stacy, I believe it's Michelson. While they're coming up, is there anyone else who will want to testify on 3363A? So I think what we'll do is we'll start with either Michael or Stacy, and then we'll get Megan's testimony as well. Uh-oh.
Our community college just had some dishes, and I figured I better bring my chair or something since I was waiting.
All righty.
only for my chair.
So actually, whoever wants to start can start.
Thanks. Chair Pusansky, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacy Michelson, political organizer with SEAU 503, and just here with a brief amendment request today. We have no issue with the content of 3363, neutral on the bill over in the House side, and when we saw that it came out with a work group, just requested that one of our frontline child welfare workers be added to that work group. Our folks at the Department of DHS care very deeply about the work that they do with children and families, and we believe that their work on that ground level adds a unique perspective and that they would be able to offer some insight into challenges and potential areas for improvement on the DHS end of court dependency hearings, and just think that that would be both a useful perspective for the work group overall, and our folks would really appreciate the opportunity to help improve the system for our children and families. So just a brief request. Sorry to bring it to you late in the game, but hope that you'll consider that today.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Chair Prozanski and committee members, my name is Megan Schultz. I am the CASA director in Lane County, and I also represent the Oregon CASA Network. There are 1,900 CASA volunteers across the state representing right now about 5,100 children in all 36 counties, and we are very excited about this bill. It will help us address some of the delays and some of the stop gaps that CASAs are seeing on the ground in terms of trying to get their work done on behalf of our community's most vulnerable children. House Bill 3363 allows CASA volunteers and other parties to have access to information that they need in order to present all that information to the judge and help give the judge all the information they need in order to make great decisions for our children. It also puts together a work group, and this is what I think is probably the most important part of this bill, is that there are many delays for these children from the time they enter until the time we can get them out. And a lot of them are caused or potentially caused by judicial or legal stop gaps or interpretations or problems. And what we're really excited about is that this work group calls together all the people that have a piece of the legal pie and puts together this group to say, where are the delays and what are you going to do about it in terms of your role within the current context of the budget and the current statutes? So it's really saying, here's the delay, here's what I can do about it, whether it's a CASA or a judge or an attorney general or a DOJ. And here's the delay, here's what I can do about it, and we can all come to agreement to move these kids through, that there's, you know, really addressing the delays. We want to get the kids out as quickly and safely as possible, and we really believe that this work group will allow that to happen, and it's going to be a privilege to work with the people to make sure that we can figure out where they are, where the delays are, and where what we can do about them. So I hope you can support House Bill 3363.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, I'm Michael Livingston. I'm the Juvenile Law Staff Counsel for the Oregon Judicial Department. The department supports 3363A. I want to mention that before I had my current job, I had the honor of serving for 2.5 years as a juvenile court, full-time juvenile court referee and pro tem judge in Marion County, and had many occasions to work with and see the work of CASAs in that county. And I can tell you from personal experience and also from familiarity with the program that CASA is not only an important but an essential element of the juvenile court dependency proceeding system. And in shorthand, their job is to make sure that everybody else in the system is doing their job, and they're the single one voice for a child in every case. I want to speak specifically about Section 4, which establishes the work group. The work group proposed consists of 11 members from different stakeholders in the system, participants who share really the responsibility for outcomes, all of whom have expertise in the area of juvenile law. A couple things I want to make clear. This is not a work group whose goal is to come up with a report that's going to sit on a shelf, and it's not even a work group whose primary deliverable is recommendations for legislation. This work group is based on the Juvenile Court Improvement Program, which is part of the Judicial Department's model court team process. And what that process is when there's a problem within a court, for example, the statutes require that petitions for jurisdiction be adjudicated within 60 days. We keep data on that. If a court's not doing that, then they want to know why. And so they bring in the judge, the DA, DHS, CRB, everybody, and say, here's a problem, and it's a system problem. What are we going to do about it? And each model court team then addresses the problem, assigns responsibility for each part, and they come up with an agreement, a plan to which they're mutually accountable to implement that program, that plan to solve that problem. Well, this is the framework for this work group. Then the primary deliverable of this work group, it's on page 6 of the printed bill, on page at lines 5 through 8, is to identify the specific actions that each entity represented by the work group members can take under existing law within current budgetary constraints to remove or mitigate the impediments identified under paragraph A of this subsection and develop a plan to put those actions into place. And because the work group has to come back and report to the legislature, in addition to looking at the work they've done, you folks are all going to also going to see the plan and what they've committed to do for each other. And this section, the work group process, really replaces a number of sections that were initially in the bill as introduced. Those sections identified real problems, but there wasn't really any need for a change in law to fix it. What it was really needed was to implement the current law in a meaningful, mindful way. And that's what this work group is designed to do. With respect to the Dash 6 amendments, if you look at the current makeup of the work group, each member of that is a person with expertise in the area of juvenile law and really a stake in the outcome of these cases, and also with the authority to make a commitment on behalf of the entity he or she represents to solve these problems. And I'm not going to make any comment one way or another on the value of the particular individual who's appointed under the Dash 6s might bring, but it seems to me, at least on the surface, the way it's framed, that this the issue of caseworker representation might be an internal DHS matter. And it's really unclear to me from the amendment what contribution that person might make. And that's not a value judgment, again, about the person or the proposal, but under the current language of the statute, each of the representatives, number one, has expertise in the area of juvenile law and also can speak for and make commitments on behalf of the entity represented by that member. I'd be happy to answer any questions that members of the committee might have.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Questions? Thank you very much for coming forward. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 3363A? Not seeing, we'll go close the public hearing. And we'll go ahead. And this one here, we have an amendment we need to get.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have the Dash A6 amendments, which would add another person, a labor organization, to the work group. And then we have a conflict amendment, which is not here yet. As you know, this is the time of year we get into conflict amendments.
Okay.
That would probably be here today or tomorrow. So we'd have to put the bill over.
All right. So, well, that's fine. So at this point, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. I believe we did that just in case we didn't. And we'll carry on. And let's see. We'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2774.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2774 comes to you from the our Committee on Judiciary on behalf of the Department of Justice, continues the task force in victims' right enforcement by repealing the sunset clause on the existing law.
All right, thank you. And Shannon Swell? Oh, well, there we go. Cannot read the last name there. Need to do a little bit of printing. Sorry, Shannon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shannon Savelle. I'm the director of the Crime Victim Services Division at the Oregon Department of Justice. I will work on my printing. Sorry. I'm here to testify on behalf of House Bill 2774, which is a bill that simply repeals the sunset on the Task Force on Crime Victims' Rights Enforcement that began in 2009 with the passage of Senate Bill 233. The task force was put into place essentially to report back to the legislature on the implementation of Senate Bill 233, which ultimately became ORS 147-500-550, and that's the implementation of victims' rights as it pertains to court proceedings. The task force is unique because it is a joint effort with OJD, public defenders, prosecutors, and other law enforcement personnel who come together to, you know, review the implementation of the rights and make recommendations on a yearly basis to the legislature for how you can improve the current laws and hopefully in the future expand on victims' rights. Currently, it is set, the task force itself is set to expire on June 2013, and the task force is requesting, and DOJ supports, the removal of the sunset so that we can keep a focus on victims' rights enforcement and continue to move forward with the task force into the coming years.
All right, thank you. Questions? All right, is there anyone else who would like to give testimony today on House Bill 2774? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearing. And are we doing ready for this?
Yes.
We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2774. And Senator Dingfelder?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2774 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves House Bill 2774 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Cruz, will you be the carrier on this one?
Yeah. Thank you. I was nodding, but I guess you needed verbal, so.
If you don't want to carry,
no, no, I said I was nodding, but you needed something verbal.
Yeah, yeah, I'm nodding.
I heard the nod. Okay.
I heard the nod.
It does rattle.
We hear the rattle. At this end.
All right, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2774. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 3183A.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3183A comes to you from the Committee on Judiciary. This bill requires the sheriff of a county to deliver the juvenile convicted of a crime in adult court to adjudicate a delinquent a sentence to custody of the Department of Corrections or custody of the Oregon Youth Authority. So, Chair, members of the committee, you have an amendment in front of you, the dash A4, that takes care of an ambiguity in the law that probably shouldn't have been put in there. And this goes to page 2, lines 20 through 23. And it says, notwithstanding ORS 137.320, the sheriff may, by agreement with the Department of Corrections, and then it says, or the supervisory authority of the county, transfer the person described in this subsection directly to the youth corrections facility. Well, that's unusual in the sense that the sheriff is part of the county, so the sheriff would be agreeing with him or herself. So this takes that language out. So it would basically the sheriff with agreement with the Department of Corrections.
Thank you. And Shannon, were you going to start?
Yes, thank you. Chair Pozanski, members of the committee, my name is Shannon White. I'm the Associate Director with Partnership for Safety and Justice. We are a nonprofit statewide advocacy organization that advocates for smart public safety policy for both victims and people convicted of crime. I am here testifying today in support of House Bill 3183, which I just want to note because I think Mr. Taylor may have read the definition. It's saying that it requires youth to be transferred directly to a youth facility, and the amendments make it permissible. But let me go into the substance of the bill. About a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, we started hearing from some of our members that youth who get convicted as adults in the state are transferred to the intake facility, the adult intake facility at Coffee Creek. I think, as many of you probably know, youth serving adult sentences in Oregon can serve them those sentences in the Oregon Youth Authority up until their 25th birthday. But youth were being sent to the Coffee Creek facility for intake, where they were staying for about a week, usually in an isolation cell for their own protection. When I contacted then Director Williams and Director Peters in her other capacity to say, why are we having kids go into the adult prison system when we all know that that is not, usually leads to bad outcomes for youth, both of them actually didn't know why that practice was in place. And so we worked together to amend that policy just administratively. But it has turned out through my work with them and now the sheriffs that there are a lot of logistical and bureaucratic barriers to actually transferring youth directly to the Oregon Youth Authority for intake, even though I think the agencies are supportive of that process. So we are continuing to negotiate making those changes official, but there was a statutory barrier to doing that because the statute required that youth be committed to the physical custody of the Department of Corrections. So this is a very simple bill that just would make it permissible, if we can work out all the other details, for youth to be transferred directly to the Oregon Youth Authority for intake, even though they are Department of Corrections commits to the system, which we know is a best practice because youth have better outcomes when they don't come into contact with adult prisoners, when they're not held in isolation cells, which can aggravate pre-existing mental health disorders, and when they're being worked with by staff who are trained specifically to work with adolescents. So that's the bill. It's fairly simple. I do want to draw your attention to testimony submitted by Christina McMahon, who's the juvenile department director from Multnomah County. It's submitted electronically. She is in support of this bill and really notes that in counties like hers, where pre-trial they choose to detain youth in juvenile facilities, that it's really incongruent to have youth spend time in the adult system on their way to the youth system. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cindy Booth. I'm with the Oregon Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections is in support of this bill. We have long partnered with Partnership for Safety and Justice, Oregon Youth Authority, and Sheriff's Association to ensure that we can implement best practices. There has been, as Shannon pointed out, an agreement in place since 2012 that allows for the direct transport of certain youth directly to OYA, bypassing Department of Corrections intake. This legislation will allow us to enter into agreements with sheriffs to provide direct transport to OYA of youth that are under the age of 18 at the time of committing the crime and under the age of 20 when they're sentenced. And we are in agreement with that.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Any comments? All right, ladies, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 3183A? Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing, and we'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 3183A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3183A. I move adoption of the dash fours. I'm assuming we have all the paperwork and everything.
No, we don't. But we want to go ahead and get the A4s
okay.
in.
So I move the dash A4s into House Bill 3183.
Senator Dingfelder moves dash 4s into House Bill 3183A. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3183A. And colleagues, we have two other bills that are scheduled for a public hearing today, but I have no one signed up. So let me ask, is there anyone here to testify on House Bill 2049? Is there anyone to testify on House Bill 2607?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could, in 2049, I had a call literally a little after midnight this morning from Scott Taylor, who I believe was coming down to testify in this bill. His mother's dying, is in a hospice, and he wanted to let us know that.
Well, what we're going to do is we're just not going to have public hearings on those bills today. We will check in with the individuals who are wanting those bills to be moved forward, and we'll decide on where we go from there. So with that, then I'm going to go ahead and close the today's committee, and we'll take care of the work session bill that's set up for at another time.
Oh.
All right. With that, anything else for the good of the order?
Well, did you want to do the work session on 22? Okay.
Right. So
there you go.